Wonderful. Well, it's great to see you all here. I applaud your longevity for sticking it out until the final sessions. I'm Karen Scherzinger, and I work with the New Mexico Emerging Infections Program. And that's a partnership between the New Mexico Department of Health and the University of New Mexico Health Sciences Center. We're one of 10 states that receive funding from CDC to do some enhanced and active surveillance of certain diseases and conditions. So today I'll be talking to you about infant pertussis. Is there anybody here who doesn't know what pertussis is? Good, that makes my job a little easier. Okay, no disclosures. So you all know that whooping cough or pertussis is on the rise, both nationally and in New Mexico. We've seen some, at least one death in New Mexico and some other deaths around the country, particularly in the infant populations. So pertussis is a vaccine-preventable disease. Of course, children don't get immunized until they're 2, 4, 6, and between 12 and 18 months. So the youngest children are at highest risk for serious complications because they don't have full active immunity until they've received about 3 doses. So infant disease can be very serious, and about half of infants under 12 months of age who get pertussis or hospitalized, and about 1% die. So there are some various recommendations around immunization. Of course, there's immunize the child, but the Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices has also recommended immunizing adults and adolescents around the child. Most recently, we saw a 2011 recommendation to immunize pregnant women if they don't have a history of recent Tdap vaccine. And then that was changed in 2013 to recommend vaccinating the pregnant women with each pregnancy. So the chart that we're looking at here has the yearly number of cases of pertussis in infants in New Mexico. And you know, generally we're in the teens, 12 to 18, 19 cases per year. And then we saw something very alarming in 2012. We saw a greater than 300% jump in infant infections. So we wanted to take a look at what was going on. So our study question was, can we quantify the impact of some socio-demographic factors on census tract level infant pertussis rates? Now, you know, we've gotten a lot of interest in looking at some of our diseases geographically. And in the absence of individual level characteristics, it's often useful to look at kind of an ecological analysis on what's increasing the risk of a certain infection or disease. So our case definition was infants, so under 12 months of age, who had pertussis during 2011 and 2012. We used the CSD case definition for confirmed and probable cases, which is essentially a positive test and coughing with perhaps some other symptoms or epidemiological link to somebody who was a confirmed case. For this project, we had one or two cases that were infants that had a positive PCR test that didn't cough for 2 weeks, but we were fairly certain after doing a review of their cases that they should be included as infant pertussis cases, so we included them in this project. So we geocoded all the infant cases. We aggregated them to their census tract of residence, and we calculated rates for each census tract. New Mexico has about 500 census tracts. New Mexico itself is a very large state, but we only have about 2 million people in our population. So you could compare that to Massachusetts, say, with about 7 million people in a much smaller area. So it's a very, very large state geographically, but small state population-wise. So our rate calculation, our numerator, was, of course, cases in infants during the time period, and our denominator was gathered from the U.S. Census, and that was the number of infants in each census tract. So we looked at some socio-demographic variables that we gathered from the 2010 U.S. Census, and also the 2006 to 2011 Aggregated American Community Survey, or ACS. So we often use Poisson regression when we deal with count data or rates. However, that assumes that the variance is equal to the mean. In this case, we weren't able to meet that assumption, so we use negative binomial regression, which adjusts the model for that. We also had a very large number of zeros, so we used the zero-inflated model. So we ended up using zero-inflated negative binomial regression. So you see listed here some census tract variables that we initially included. We looked at total population, the percentage of the population under age 5. We wanted to kind of get an idea of where the youngest kids are living in New Mexico. We looked at the percent of the census tract that reported as Hispanic. We looked at mean household sizes, median household incomes, and the percent of families living in poverty in each census tract. Now, we weren't able to get immunization data on anything lower than a county level, but we did use the 24-month 4331, so the series of shots, by 24 months of age. And so we had that coverage level for each county. And the reason we included this is we wanted to get a feeling for, like many other states, New Mexico has some pockets where there are a number of people that have decided they don't want to vaccinate their children. So we wanted to see if that had an impact on our outcome, which was census tract level pertussis. So in terms of results, we had 102 cases during this time period, 2011 and 2012. And about 17% of census tracts in New Mexico were represented in our sample. You see some big increases in incidence between 2011 and 2012. So we started in 2011 with about 56 infants per 100,000, and that jumped dramatically to 286 per 100,000. So here's New Mexico. Anybody here been to New Mexico? A couple of people. It's big, right? It's huge. So the dark outlines are counties, and our census tracts are surrounded in gray, a little bit difficult to see. But what I want to show you with this map is that pertussis is really kind of scattered throughout the state. It's not really concentrated in any one area. So for our census tracts that had cases, the rates were between about 425 and 3,500 cases per 100,000. So routine pertussis follow-up includes a telephone interview with the parents of infants, and we gather some individual characteristics of the children. So on the left side there, we're looking at infant pertussis incidence in Hispanic versus non-Hispanic populations. And I should probably mention that our major racial and ethnic groups in New Mexico, we have about 45% of our population is Hispanic. About 40% is non-Hispanic whites. We have about 10% American Indians, and then other racial ethnic groups make a very small proportion. So we saw an enormous jump between 2011 and 2012 in the rates for Hispanics. So we have 47 cases per 100,000 in 2011, and that jumped up to almost 300 cases per 100,000 in 2012. The other chart you see on the right here is household size of cases in red, and in orange is the New Mexico overall household size as reported by the U.S. Census. That's about 2.6. For Hispanics in the U.S. Census, it's about 2.9, and you see that cases really tended to have large households in comparison to what we would consider our average household size in New Mexico. One more thing about individual characteristics. When you look at the infants by age group, we saw that almost 70% of our infant cases were under that 6 months of age. So that's a very high-risk group for getting pertussis and for serious outcomes as well. So here's our census tract variables. And what we wanted to do was take a look at these and see if we could quantify the risk of these on our outcome of tract-level pertussis. Now, we initially did a univariate analysis to identify which characteristics we wanted to include in our final model, and we were actually very surprised that there were very few of these characteristics that seemed to have any impact on our tract-level pertussis. So in the end, in our final model, we selected the three that seemed to have an impact. Total population, percent of the census tract that was Hispanic, and the percent less than 5 years of age. We're actually very surprised that some of the poverty and also household size characteristics didn't seem to have an impact at a univariate level. So, here's the results of our adjusted model, and we're a little bit surprised to see this given some previous analyses that we've done. So we stratified the three variables into some different categories, and what we saw was interesting. So we saw reduced rates in those census tracts that had higher populations. We weren't expecting this because it seemed to us that the urban populations had higher, certainly higher numbers of children getting pertussis, but it seemed to be higher rates. When we looked at the percent of the census tract under age 5, we saw a similar thing. When there were fewer little kids in the population, the rates were higher. So we weren't quite sure what was going on with that until we sat down and started to think about that. And I'll address that in just a minute. Now, we did see an increase in risk in our Hispanic population. So as the percent of the Hispanic population in the census tract increased, we also saw an increase in risk. So about a 30 to 40% increase in risk. So, some unexpected results. With the population size and the less than 5 population, we saw some contradictory results. But then we sat down and started thinking about this. I mentioned that New Mexico has a very low population. Some of these census tracts are very small. And when you have one or two cases in a very small population, it can look like a huge rate. So you're seeing an overestimation of rates in these very low population census tracts and maybe an underestimation of rates in the higher populations. So we were also very surprised that the immunization coverage at 24 months didn't seem to have an impact. But perhaps we were looking at the wrong thing. So maybe we should have been looking at Tdap coverage. So the adolescent and adult version of the vaccine for adolescents and moms in particular, any kind of cocoon members surrounding these newborn babies. Also, household size, surprisingly, was unimportant. Now, we know that individual characteristics don't always mimic census tract level results, but we were surprised to see that household size wasn't among our predictors. So we did see a minimal effect of increasing Hispanic population, and it could well be that this is related to household size. In New Mexico, many of our Hispanic households, particularly the ones that we've seen at the individual level, had very high household sizes. So some limitations of our project. As I mentioned, we need to be very careful, particularly in small population areas like New Mexico, with our geographic units. And so if I were to repeat this study, I don't know that I would use census tract level. It's just too small in some situations, and there's a lot of variability. So another thing we could do is look at multiple years' worth of data. Now, I use 2 years' worth of data, but perhaps we should be looking at maybe 3 to 4 years of data. Some other variables that we should investigate, as I mentioned, were adolescent and cocoon member Tdap booster coverage rates in addition to maternal Tdap. We could also look at something like household makeup. Now, I think there's some evidence lately that there's some waning immunity in the teenager and young adult population. The kids that received the acellular pertussis vaccine perhaps need a booster. And I know some states, New Mexico included, requires a middle school booster, but maybe we should be looking at the proportions of the census tract that have a lot of teens and young adults. So I should also mention here that New Mexico is one of six emerging infections program states that's taking part in a case control evaluation of maternal Tdap strategies to prevent pertussis in infants. So that's going on right now, and we're gathering a lot of information there, and we're finding that right now there's not a very high proportion of moms in New Mexico that are vaccinated according to the recommendations. However, we are seeing that number increase, particularly since the early 2013 recommendations that suggested immunization of pregnant women with each pregnancy. And that's perhaps a better method of risk factor determination. So just some final thoughts here. You know, we really didn't see any large-scale effects of variables on our outcome. However, I think if we improved our study design, we could probably better quantify risks. So perhaps using larger geographic areas, using more years of data. So just to mention a couple of things that we have in progress in New Mexico, I mentioned the Tdap evaluation. We've also added some questions to our pregnancy risk assessment monitoring survey to assess moms' recall of Tdap given during their pregnancy. We also have in the works a statewide provider survey. So we're going to all the prenatal care providers to assess their knowledge of the new recommendations and to see if they're actually giving these doses in their facilities. One more thing I should mention is that we're seriously looking into strengthening the guidelines around our non-medical vaccine exemptions. So right now it's fairly easy in New Mexico for a parent to say, I don't want my child vaccinated. So one of the things that we want to look at is how do we better enforce the recommendations that we have, and also should we strengthen them up in some way? I think there's a body of research out there that suggests if you make it harder and harder for a parent to get an exemption, then our vaccination rates do go up. So I just want to close with the thought that the biggest risk of an infant pertussis is coming into contact with somebody who has pertussis. So I'm sure all of you have your Tdap booster updated, but if you have any friends or family members that are pregnant right now, maybe suggest that they talk to their providers about getting that Tdap dose during pregnancy. So that's I can close now. I don't know, Dr. Hutchins, if you want to do questions now or at the end?
We definitely have time to do questions.
Okay.
Questions now.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it'll be really interesting to see what the results of the provider survey are. I mean, I'm getting the feeling that more and more providers know about the recommendation, but they just don't keep the vaccine in their office. And they, you know, they tell the pregnant mom, well, you have to go to your primary care provider. You have to go to the county health department. Well, when you're working full time and you're running back to the doctor every month anyway for your prenatal care, it's one of those things that kind of gets swept by the wayside, but it is important. New Mexico's special. Don't worry, not very many New Mexicans have insurance, so. Yeah, you're with Connecticut, you said? Yeah, you know. Okay. Yeah, you know, Connecticut is an emerging infections program state, and I know that the survey is being funded through EIP, so I'm sure that we could share both the survey and the results with you.